Hey, what's going on? Welcome to the Doug Show. I'm Doug Cunnington, and today I'm joined by my good friend Jason Paul Hendricks. How are you today?
Doing good.
And we're at FinCon recording in the convention center here in Portland. We're sitting like in a big corridor. It's huge. The ceiling must be 30 feet high. And it's quiet in here. So a lot of times I'm like recording live and there's a noise from the crowd. There's just people walking by. So it's pretty chill and quiet. But we knew we were going to hang out. And I'm like, we got to record together. And Jason, you sent me a bunch of ideas that you had, which is great. That's my homework and I didn't have to do it. So we're going to go through a lot of stuff. But like for people that don't know who you are, give a little intro. And you've been on the show a couple times, but we'll link up, but who are you?
Sure. It's great to be back. Thanks for having me. Jason Hendricks. I do a variety of things from a earnings standpoint. I do business development consulting broadly for fintech companies. I've always had one foot in the marketing space, and you know that's the area that originally got me connected to you. Been a longtime listener and watcher of the channel. And so on that side of my brain, I've built a couple of SaaS products, and I live in Asia. So I currently live in Bangkok. Long time lived in Hong Kong before that. Again, this related to the finance industry work that I've done, but there's a whole lot of SEO and marketing conferences in Asia as well. And so a big part of the community that I interact with is over there on the Asia side, even though the U.S. is my home.
And you were into side hustle stuff for several years. Cause I've been doing my stuff since 2014-ish when I started publishing online. When did you get started like working online in this sort of like niche site area or SaaS products related?
Yeah. So right throughout my career, I sort of did the marketing thing for the companies I work with. I usually work with small companies, but I think in earnest, I started building out sites in 15, 16, we'll say, 2015, okay. 2016. And so there's a bunch of sites that I continue to work on or help maintain. So there's a couple of folks that have subject matter expertise in certain areas of travel or food, and I help them with the upkeep of the site, but none of these were ever heavily focused on traffic and ad revenue or affiliate. They were more brand for sort of brand maintenance and for other business activities, and this was sort of the brochure of the business. Mm-hmm. And even my consulting business, I've got websites related to that, but I'm not looking to organic or SEO to bring in customers. I do that through other means.
Got it. Okay, cool. And you, I was going to say, not to name drop, but Matt Giovannisi is around here and you followed him for a little while also. Yes. And the cool thing is I was like, Matt, you should maybe come. It's like awesome in Portland. Like he loves Portland. He's a big beer guy. And the thing is like Matt came to these events for years. Mm. So he is like one of the original people and he knows there's a handful of people that have been to all of the FinCons or they've been fixtures for many years. Yep. And he knows them from like 8 or 10 years ago, stuff like that. So anyway, he's around here. We're going to be able to hang out. Funny, you guys haven't crossed paths yet, but we'll be able to.
I know him, but he doesn't know me as well. But although I did, when you first moved down to Colorado, I don't know if you remember, I sent an intro email and you guys knew about each other before, right. I think. But I had sent, I was like, hey, Matt, this guy Doug is moving down. You got it.
And I think, because we knew, I remember listening the first time that I remember like, oh yeah, this guy Matt, it was on Nick Loper's podcast, Side Hustle Nation. And the funny thing, because I'm a podcast listener, many different topic areas, but I was listening to that. And I remember because I was living in Bozeman and I was walking my dog on a specific trail and I could just picture because Matt was talking about Brew Cabot. And was like, and I'm a home brewer. So we had all these different interests. The funny thing is like Matt and I actually finally met at, it was like a brew day at the co-working space where we know, like Mr. Money Mustache, not to name drop, our other friend, Pete, Aidney. And yeah, so it was there and we were just brewing beer, hanging out. And then nice. Like, we didn't even talk about business, but I was like, hey, we basically do the same thing. Like, let's talk about it. And then we started hanging out after that. And now he lives like a mile and a half away or something. Nice. So, okay. Well, it's cool that we're going to be able to cover a lot of things. Do you, and we recorded it, FinCon a couple years ago.
Yeah, New Orleans.
And do you remember what we talked about? What were you working on then?
I don't remember. So I was working on another SaaS product at the time, Chrome extension. Mm-hmm. I still have that. A little something has changed in the SERPs, you know, the Google SERPs. So I don't focus on that Chrome extension quite as much. We also debated a little bit about you know, opinions on FHIR and whatnot, because we're at FinCon.
Oh, right, right.
No need to relitigate, of course.
Who won?
Yeah.
So we both lost, I remember.
No, I think.
Did we talk? I don't even remember that. Okay, obviously very memorable.
Ever so briefly.
All right. So one of the topics that you mentioned is just essentially like online business. And we passed Ricky Kessler from Income School. He was sitting right over there. And I haven't had a chance to chat with him too much, but I think his talk is related to blogging in general. And yeah, we were kind of talking like, is blog, like, for years, people were like, oh, is blogging dead? And I mean, I kind of think, yeah, like a website can serve a different purpose, but it's not like it was. Like the people creating that content, like most of the talks here, people are interested. It's video. Like currently, everyone's just like video, pick whatever platform, but it's video. People aren't writing like in the same way. So yeah, what's your take? What do you think? Blogging and SEO and the whole thing?
Yeah, I think. The term blogging, when it was used more commonly, was about, you know, consistently and in a recurring fashion, creating content. And if you did that and, you know, the algorithm gods sort of smiled on you, then you would get traffic from Google, usually, right? People say vlogging now. They don't hesitate to use that term. Mm-hmm. But of course, you have to publish on YouTube if you're going to do that. And will the algorithm gods shine on you if you do that? Sometimes yes, sometimes no. But I think to the degree to which a website is still a thing you own, it's still your property, you know, your stake in the ground. I think it's silly to suggest that websites are dead, right? So is the word blogging sort of antiquated? Probably, you know. I think if you just, you know, build, you know, write content and they will come, I don't think that's a thing anymore.
Right.
And so, but is it important if you're running your, you know, doing this as a business, is it important to have a place that is your home base where you can bring leads? This is where you're going to collect an email from a visitor, and through email interactions, you're going to grow a relationship with them. When you podcast, right? Mm-hmm. You have the distribution platforms for podcasting. But there again, it's nice if you can bring them back to a place and you know, interact with them there. If you're selling a course or, mm-hmm. you know, selling a ebook or something, and another antiquated term, but still a thing, right? A digital product. Then, you know, for that reason, I think you know, websites are still important.
Do you still have? Because you built a handful of niche sites, like. So what do you have around? You kind of mentioned earlier some things are around. How many sites do you have left? Or like, are you earning money in a traditional way with them? Or what's going on?
Yeah, no, the websites that generate income for me are there to advertise and promote my skills and expertise. I give visitors an opportunity to make an appointment with me. The sort of consulting business I do, it's much more one-on-one. Mm-hmm. So it's to that degree, it's kind of high ticket relative to what some people maybe in the traditional affiliate space would consider. It also doesn't scale. Like consulting the way I'm doing it isn't something you can replicate. I would like to in time when I feel confident to do so, you know, create digital products that, that can, you know, serve many people without me having to get involved. But at the moment, my focus with those sites are to, you know, get visitors, tell them what I do, who I do it for, and get them to engage with me. And from there, I'll sign a consulting agreement with them and
okay,
and take it from there.
Similar, you know, essentially you mentioned like an online course model where, you know, you create the asset.
Yep.
And then you're able to, whatever it may be, it could be text-based or it could be probably video, but it could be something else. It could be odd, whatever you want it to be. I have heard some people say, and I have not researched it, so I'm curious if you have any, if you've heard anything on the streets out there, you know, where people are talking about online courses on the
yep.
streets
yep.
of Portland.
Street.
Yeah. It's crazy out here in Portland. Cause I was, you know, I was walking around this morning and yeah, someone's like passed out on stairs and like other, there's, it's just a little, it's wilder. It's like it's, that
die. Doesn't happen in your hometown.
yeah, I was watching this documentary, Portlandia. Did you see that? Did you see that one?
Documentary.
Okay. I think it was, as far as I could tell, it was a documentary. So I was going to ask a question. Do you, what, it was all that for a joke.
About courses on the street.
Yep.
I got you.
All right. The great thing is like, since I don't edit these, so I'm leaving all that in that whole mess in there. So, okay. So online courses, I heard someone mention that like, maybe online courses have peaked and they're kind of dropping down. Mm. But I wonder if it's just the industry, because I've seen, you know, other people say, oh yeah, I'm doing awesome. What do you think?
Okay. So I strongly believe there's going forward, increasingly there will be something I like to call a human premium. With all the AI content and even AI video getting better and better, it's gonna be used in different ways, can be used in advertisements, so on and so forth. And people are going to just accept it, right? And they're still going to buy the product. I mean, I think there's going to be a period of time where you see, oh, you know, obviously AI video used in an ad. Some people will say, well, I'm never going to buy from that company if they're going to do that. But over time, I think people are just going to get anesthetized. However, I think when it comes to learning, especially, things that are, you know, is a higher value, or more important interaction, more important part of one's life, money or, you know, whatever you could say, you know, money or health, these sorts of things. I think it's become ever more important to identify and connect with real humans that you trust, that, you know, have provable, expertise in an area. And I think for that reason, I think that real human beings producing quality content, you know, where it's important to do so. If you're an affiliate niche site and you're just writing about rice cookers, okay, those days are gone, right?
Right.
It's not an important enough purchase mm-hmm. to justify that, okay? But I think in a lot of areas, online, so-called online courses is going to continue to be a thing. But, you know, you just have to be authentic and you have to be real. You have to bring real expertise and provide real quality. I mean, which is the things that mm-hmm. Google always talked about. But I think, so I don't think courses are dead or whatever.
Yeah. I see a lot of them. I watch a lot of guitar, YouTube, and the sound check, which will play after the interview here. We talk about guitars and stuff, so I watch a lot of guitar stuff on YouTube, and a lot of those, I mean, I think the guys that are doing the best, they have courses and like they're priced kind of all over the place. Some are fairly cheap, some are like $30 a month, some are like $75 for like one course where you'll learn a specific thing. And just like probably any online course where people are creating the stuff on their own, there's different quality. So like, I think I bought a course. I love the creator, but and the material was fine, but there were no exercises. So it's just like spitting out information at me. And then I'm like, what am I supposed to be able to do after I know this? How do I know when I've like accomplished it? How do I know that I've mastered and I know the things that we went through? Again, I understand it when we're talking through it, but that does that mean I can play it afterwards? So, and obviously like that sort of thing, you could learn almost anything on YouTube and probably the same thing that's within the courses. So it's like, again, there's varying levels of quality because most of the course was good, but I'm like, I feel like I didn't learn anything at the end of it because I didn't know what he, anyway, I'm not sure, but there's better ways to do courses in general.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. But I assume that, because I think you said it, it starts with you sort of knowing and trusting.
Yeah, first. Totally. Yeah.
Had a relationship with him, albeit a virtual one from his content. Then you got the confidence level and then you bought the course.
And his videos are entertaining. So I was just like, oh, you know what? I want to support him. So, because as I'm going through, you know, iterations of the Doug Show and like how I'm currently not earning money on Mile High Five, but I used to earn just a little bit to cover the cost. And now I'm looking at it and I'm like, oh, I understand. Like if I like this guy's videos and I want him to keep doing it, I need to buy something. Otherwise there's no reason for him to do it. Cause like at the end of the day, I mean, that guy, you know, he's younger, he's not in the FI space. He needs to work and earn some fucking money. But if I'm looking at like what I'm doing and I see friends of mine that retired years ago and they like kind of just stop blogging because they reached their goal and they're like, well, I'm not getting anything out of this and I'm not earning money from it anymore. So that's where I'm like, okay, I need to make sure I understand why I'm doing it and for who. And like, are we both getting value from this? And occasionally, I don't know, we'll do a telethon. I have an idea to do a telethon. Just like Jerry Lewis back in the day. And I'm like, support, I'll send you this $800 fucking tote
the
bag.
The kids in the audience aren't going to know the reference, but I get it.
I'll send you a t-shirt with Georgie, or I'll send you this $85 sticker with Georgie's face on it.
I'm telling you, should do. Some people have Instagram accounts for their dogs. You should just do a whole separate YouTube channel for
I could. Yeah.
Georgie Cam.
The Georgie Cam. I thought about, because I have like another webcam, and I thought about just like setting it where she sits, and then I'm just like, there's a
picture.
Yeah. And then she's like, looks up or licks herself or some kind of inappropriate. I'll just have to put a blur thing right over her. All right. So anything else on sites before we move on to some of the other stuff?
Websites are not dead.
Okay. Yeah. It's, well,
in all sorts of other areas, outside of affiliate and content, you know, ad revenue and stuff, there's all sorts of reasons why they're not dead.
Okay. So there have been a lot of talks, I think. At least I don't go to as many talks, but there's AI talk. There's talk about.
I saw
about
one this morning.
Okay. Yep. And there's, as soon as I heard people talk about vibe coding, I stopped listening because I was like, I think I'm just going to be a little annoyed with it. Because I kind of saw some of the, I saw symptoms of issues that might arise from it very quickly. So actually, can you define vibe coding just in a general sense so I don't mangle it?
Sure. Well, this is my take. It's, you know, if you use one of the AI tools and you simply ask for an output, and you could do that for, give me a script for a YouTube video, here's the topic, it will give you a bunch of output. You can do the same with code. Give me the whatever JavaScript code necessary for this purpose, right? For this application, I'm going to use it here. It should do the following. The person who's doing that might be a coder or somebody who knows programming, or maybe not. But, you know, they're just sort of feeling their way through the process. We don't call it something special when we ask the AI to give us written content, because we all use language every day. So everyone presumably can speak English, you know, at least in this country. And, you know, we're just amazed by the output. the coder or the programmer who does the same thing with these same tools also gets output. The reason I think the concept of vibe coding came up is because non-programmers started asking AI to produce this software, produce an application. I want it to do this, that, or the other thing. But that, as you just alluded to, can lead to problems.
And I think the big, I have many biases around this. So I'll call them out so it's a little bit easier. I have a software background, so I think I'm better than other people. Right? I mean, that's the fastest way to say it.
And with regard to software design, you probably are better than most other people, statistically speaking. So then go ahead.
Yeah. And then the project management, which, I mean, like when you peel that back, the project management stuff does help you in the software development lifecycle. It helps you understand all that shit and like testing and regression testing. And basically when someone, a vibe coder, for example, maybe they find a bug and then they're going to go fix it. And then they fix the bug that they were trying to fix, but they accidentally broke something before. You have to test things to make sure that you didn't break something that was working before.
Yep.
And testing is most of like the software process. It's just like fucking testing it over and over again.
Very well said.
And I think it's really cool that maybe someone without a coding background, a designer perhaps, but yeah, maybe they just have like a more artistic background and they don't know the coding process and they get something going. It's really awesome to be able to get it going without having to consult with like a technical person.
Right.
And it's much cheaper to prototype to get it kind of in the right spot. The issue is like if someone tries to sell that prototype version to
A finished product.
Yeah. And they're trying to fail fast or trying to iterate all these like one sentence things that we learned from Silicon Valley. Great show. So if you're trying to do that, then you'll end up in a spot where like, okay. And I basically like, if I see a product that was done in that way and I buy it and I'm like, oh, cool. I'm getting a lifetime access to this thing. And I'm thinking that the person is going to stand behind it and they're going to iterate on it. And, you know, version 5 is going to be amazing, but they kind of lose steam on it. And then I paid $100 for something that never gets past the prototype. And then I'm like, oh, this whole thing was a waste. So, I saw it before when coders were doing it in fucking, what's Noah Kagan's cheap?
AppSumo.
So it's like, oh yeah, lifetime. You get the lifetime access. It's not sustainable. The company goes out of business and then you have software that doesn't work. So like this is stupid, right?
Well, we started very general and now you've gotten very specific, but
yeah. So fuck all them. I'm just kidding.
So, okay. So a little bit to unpack there. So first of all, I think it's clear that, in companies large and small, the actual programmers, the development departments are using these tools. There's no question. Just like marketers or writers or whoever, what we've been doing with, what you've done in the past with AI tools for content, for whatever, prose, fiction, nonfiction, whatever. You can use these things as efficiency tools. The right way to do it is to get outlines, idea starters, right? And of course, you need a human to come back and humanize it, not for purposes of avoiding AI detection, but to actually make it good, right? To move it from passable to good. And when folks, for instance, that maybe for which English is not a first language, a couple years ago got their hands on these tools and would just, whatever, auto crap out these articles and push them live without any kind of interaction, it was obvious. It was shit, right? In the same way, a non-programmer, a non-coder, and so the coders, the programmers, the developers are using these tools to speed up their process.
Okay.
For the non-developers, the so-called vibe coders, to bring it back to the fun part of what you said, when they do it, they don't have the coding background to actually look at the code. It would be as if they had produced this English language article, but they didn't speak English. So they have no way of discerning whether this is good or excellent, right? Mm-hmm. And they have no way of looking at the code. And so this is a problem. Now, I think, as you said, the selling lifetime deals and pushing these sort of half-baked products out there, that's been happening for a long time, right? I don't know if it was with you or with somebody, like I also associate that with like ClickBank and mm-hmm. like these kinds of offers. Like maybe there's some useful thing there, but like you just put a wrapper or a package around it, sell it for a ridiculous amount of money, and then whatever, you're done. And having said that, the lifetime deal thing, right? So I say this because one of the companies that they've got a marketing related, it's a link related SaaS tool. They're sort of second in their space. They're doing well. They've got good growth in their MRR and all of that stuff. You know, they got their start with lifetime deals. They didn't do it through AppSumo. They did like direct lifetime deals. But for them, it was like a way to get early funding, to do more development, and also to get early feedback from customers. They have, you know, made a very hard decision to move to actual subscriptions. They say hard because they could easily keep selling lifetime deals. They keep putting investment into their code and developing the product, but they have to like wean themselves from lifetime deals because it's so easy for them to do that if they wanted to, but they made the right choice and they moved away. So I would say that lifetime deals aren't always bad, but yeah, if you're the scammy type and you're just crapping out a product, whether you use AI to do it or not, mm-hmm. And then you have no intention of supporting the product or your customers, that's always a bad thing.
Yeah, and I do agree. Like, lifetime deals aren't always bad. They can be done in a bad way.
Absolutely. They're abused by a lot, but it's not always.
And I guess this is the perfect time to let you know I have a new product out, and you can actually get a lifetime deal. But only on this episode.
Well, I thought it was, that's the $0 subscribe to the Doug Show
deal, Yeah, lifetime.
Well, you'll have access to all the episodes for a lifetime. It's not a commitment on Doug's part that he's going to keep producing it for his life.
Some life. Okay, so cool. All right, anything else with the vibe coding?
Okay. Well, I will say one extra thing. This is a little bit of a pitch. So my tech partner for my SaaS product, he's got a tool of his own, which came out of some of our sort of efforts of playing mm-hmm. around with vibe. So I've tried some of these tools. I mean, some of them are just, so you're a programmer guy, you know, an IDE, it's a enhanced sort of coding window that developers use. So there's a bunch of those like Cursor and Windsurf and stuff that are AI enabled, right? But then there's like Lovable. You heard of Lovable?
I think I have.
And Replit is another one. So these ones are really going after this sort of non-programmer vibe coder type, and they let you sort of see the tool working in the window. They also make it so you can publish your project, but it really is not that at all. Like, you can't deploy the product. It's still just an MVP, like you mm-hmm. said. And but what we identified when we tried to play around with these things and then quickly went back to our human programmers was this code auditing problem. And so he came up with a tool that makes it easy for folks that have done this sort of programming to run their GitHub repo through this auditing tool. And it'll tell you if you've got security vulnerabilities. Because the thing people forget is that these AI tools, they scraped the internet for everything, right? Right. They scraped the text, but they scraped all the code. And as a result, they scraped security vulnerabilities as well. And so those things will creep into the code that the AI writes. So anyway, there are ways to sort of make it more secure, but you still need human beings. That's the punchline.
Gotcha. So that's a thing that is a product.
Yeah, that's Let Me Check AI, if I can name drop it. But mm-hmm. yeah, that's my tech partner's product.
Right? Okay, and, gotcha.
So people can just go check it out. But you know, if you don't have a GitHub repo and already have code, you're not going to be able to do much with it.
Okay,
that's what it's for.
What do you think? Well, it sounds like maybe tools like that might be where vibe coding is going, so that people can like effectively use the AI tools to code, have products, and then have other AI check it to make sure it's high quality. Is that that's where you see it going?
So the the AI involved in this product is suggestions for how to fix it. The auditing part is not AI related. It uses other methods. But I think the point is that the tools like this have been used by programmers all this time. Mm-hmm. This tool makes it easy for non-programmers to just plug their repo in and use it. I think where it's going is human programmers are still going to have jobs. That's where I think it's going. Like copywriters and authors and the human premium that I mentioned earlier, I still think, you know, humans need to be in the loop for all this stuff.
One, you know, social media is horrible, as we know, but I saw that creators, they're taking real content. So they're taking like our conversation. Mm. They're like stripping the transcript.
Yep.
And then they're putting AI, and it's essentially like a little avatar. Like it looks like a human because yep. AI is very good. And then it's like a reaction video, and they put something else in the background. And the thing is, like, if you go on Shorts or Reels, or I'm sure TikTok, which I'm not on, I'm sure I know I see all the time just copy written stuff. People take it, even like they take it from TikTok and then they put it on Instagram, and they're like, let me know if you have any issues with this. And they like credit it by putting the, you know, the handle on there. But yeah, there's all this theft
that's
going
right.
on.
Yep.
And yeah, any thoughts on that?
Well, so I mean, some of these platforms really encourage it, right? I mean, even YouTube does now, right? If you want to clip it and repurpose it and whatnot. Mm-hmm. So, and it'll strip out your, if there's copyright music in there, I guess it'll strip it. I mean, so the platforms encourage it. I think it's, unfortunately, I think it's a symptom of our nature as human consumers. Like, I think your specific example is a form of criticism, right? A sort of reaction. That reaction video thing, whether it's in Shorts or not, that's a whole genre of content, right? And I don't think that's two people talking over the fence in their backyard. I mean, about the neighbors. That's not going to go away. But actually, the fact that there's theft.
Yeah.
Even before the AI started doing it to us.
Right. Yeah. Well, no, I'm talking. So that's one thing, the reaction video, because you can claim that as fair use.
That's right.
That is probably okay. If someone is actually adding something to the conversation.
Some value.
But I'm saying people are literally taking like stuff that you and I say and then
transcript, just giving an avatar to it.
Yep. So it's a different voice, and then it gets views and it looks different.
Human premium.
Yeah.
And I think in time,
but
that
it looks
stuff
like a human, and it's our words. Yeah. So because that's the thing, like it ended up being like, oh man, I agree 100%. That's why I do these shows. But at the same time, I'm like, I don't know how you defend against that other than just like.
Don't the platforms at least attempt to market as AI produced?
I don't know. I would hope so. But at the end of the day, if it keeps you on the platform and they show more ads, I don't know if they give a fuck. I suspect not.
I think you're right. I don't know. All I can say is I have faith and hope that originality and human connection will persevere.
Yeah. It's interesting. It's very interesting. I think, the human premium, especially like we're at a live event. It's really awesome. There's no replacing, just hanging out. So you've been to how many FinCons now?
This is my second.
It is your second.
I was in New Orleans. I skipped Atlanta. I apologize. I know it's your hometown.
That's all right. It was pretty fun. Like one cool thing there was there were way more parties. And I was like, this is what I heard they were like before. But we don't have, there's not as many parties this year. The other thing in Atlanta, it was also a Hyatt Regency, but they had like breakfast in the morning, like nice breakfast in the morning if you stayed at the hotel, and they don't have it here. So it's a little bit of a bummer for some of the amenity things, but It's really cool to hang out. So is there anything that you are looking to get out of coming to FinCon this year?
Well, we're talking all this AI stuff, and so that does play a role in some of my startup and business activities. I mean, it's hard to avoid it. Even my consulting clients ask how they can use it. So one of the things I was, looking forward to is seeing how it's seeping into the broader content creator ecosystem. Like we mentioned, I went to a panel this morning, a talk. It was pretty good. It was very automation focused. It was about how to create efficiencies. And I think, and the only point where it brushed up against content creation was, giving outlines and ideas and stuff. And she never even alluded to the idea of using it to produce the actual content. And I think people are coming to the conclusion that it's good for some things. We still need to do the work. I was glad to see that. I'm also here to check out the fintech companies because, although my focus is more B2B fintechs, I've already met a couple of founders or CEOs of some of these B2C fintech companies that are here, and that's been super interesting.
Very cool. Yeah, it's a cool event if people are able to check it out. I know like the Doug Show audience, actually it's a broad range. So a handful of the folks would be literally interested in this type of thing. Even if you're adjacent to anything money or financially related, like it works. And then there's a lot of overlap, like as you walk around, like it's like people that are super into YouTube or whatever platform. Right. It's very fun. All right, cool. Anything else you got on your mind that you're working on?
Yes. Well, my enthusiastic support for websites, I do have a reason why that's on my mind these days. So my other SaaS project that I'm working on is called AI App OnSite. It's currently a WordPress plugin, but it will be CMS agnostic soon. And it has an AI component, obviously, you can tell from the name. It's on the tin. So the idea here is just think AI-powered smart forms and apps. If there was something that you built a GPT for on OpenAI, if folks are not aware, right? OpenAI has this thing where you can build these little GPTs. It'll be a canned prompt. Maybe you upload some extra content to make it smarter, and it becomes this sort of app. But it lives on OpenAI. And what a lot of folks here are even talking about is, build this GPT and you can send your audience over to it and it helps them in some way. My premise here is that you shouldn't have to send people away from your website. Like, bring them to your website, and this tool allows you to effectively build the equivalent of a GPT on your website with no code. You don't have to do any crazy coding to make it happen. The other common use case would be, if you have a contact form or a support form on your website. Right now, these are sort of dumb forms. Most people don't even use them unless they want to complain to you about something, But if you can instead offer a smart form that asks them for their email, but asks them a couple more questions, and they're going to get a real-time answer, a real-time analysis or report, whatever the business you happen to be in, this makes it easy to build this sort of AI-powered, real-time app on your site. And you still get the content sent to you. You can send it into your CMS, all of that sort of thing. But your client, your prospect, your site visitor gets a real-time response instead of just clicking the button and hoping someone gets back to them someday.
Okay. And it sounds like it could be for almost any industry. It's just like someone would need to know what they wanted to do.
Right. So you bring your own API key as well. So you may recall from when you were covering the AI stuff, there's a lot you can do just going to a ChatGPT window. But you can also get an API key and you can put that in other tools. There's other tools where you can use that. So you get your own API key, which means I'm not charging credits, right? This is another thing. The free version of this, it's completely free right now. And you could do a lot with the free tier. You bring your own key, and yeah, you can, you also have full control over the prompt as well. So if you know how to write a prompt and talk to ChatGPT, you can build one of these as well.
Gotcha. Pretty cool. How long have you been working on that?
Since inception, about a year and a half,
okay,
which is way longer than it should have been. Because I
you vibe coded it, didn't you?
No,
admit it. Come on, you did.
I didn't. I can tell you my vibe coding story is just it ended in disaster. So it's not as fun a story. No, I didn't. This is definitely human coders. In fact, I'm on my second development team. The first ones didn't work out.
Okay,
so
that's probably why it took a while.
Oh, right. You're being kind.
Yeah. All right. That's pretty cool. So we'll link up to that so people could check it out. And like what size business or like who should check out that tool? Like,
well, anybody who has a website. And so we're going after sort of the two ICPs, right? So anybody with a website who gets visitors but needs to convert more of them. So one of the ideas is like we get far less traffic to our websites, any kind of websites, than we used to. Thank you, Google. Right? So you need to do more with the visitors you still get. And so the idea here is by offering this real-time value, you can convert more visitors. So anybody who's got a site with a form could potentially get value from this. The other folks that I would suggest take a look is agencies, because if you're a marketing agency or a web development agency, you've got existing clients. You may have a retainer with them. You're doing regular monthly maintenance, but offering them to build an AI app on the site represents a new project. You can get an affiliate kickback from me if you buy the paid tier, but you know, more importantly, you can ask your client for which I think is perfectly reasonable. If it takes 5 to 10 hours of work to develop the prompt and ideate with your client to build their app, then that's billable time. So so marketing or web development agencies that want to increase the value of their existing clients can take a look at this too.
Are any people using it now?
A handful of folks are in our sort of early adopter
pool. Lifetime deal.
Even better. They got it for free. So
okay. Gotcha.
By the way, I'd love to come back and talk about it because I'm probably going to do a lifetime deal.
Okay.
I haven't decided yet.
But okay.
So we'll see how it goes.
Yeah.
I can give you the inside scoop on AppSumo these days too. It's like
okay.
I would do it through AppSumo if I did it.
Oh, yeah.
So it's just going to be a whole interesting experiment.
Gotcha. All right. Yeah. That sounds interesting because like there's one, I don't know if this will come out as a fully formed thought. I liked Noah Kagan a lot, and I don't know him personally or anything like that. Seems like a good guy overall. I would watch his content and then I would feel bad. So I stopped watching. I was like, don't show me this channel ever again. And I do that. I highly recommend it. If there's something, even if it's, I'm like, oh, I'm learning something or whatever. I was like, you know what? This guy kind of gets me down. So I turned it off and I don't want it anymore. But I listened to his interview and I listened to all his stuff, back in the day and found him influential. But anyway, I think I heard an interview with, Tim Ferriss and Noah mentioned like, if someone is like, kind of not committing, he's like, come on, open your calendar right now, kind of pressuring them into scheduling a meeting or a follow-up call. He's like, let's do it right now. Like, we're not going to wait. And I was like, I don't like that kind of high pressure.
I agree.
On the flip side, there's a wonderful interview, I think, on the Knowledge Project podcast
Great
with
channel.
Shane Parrish. I think that's his name.
Yep.
Daniel Kahneman. And Daniel Kahneman said he got a phone call during the interview. And someone was trying to get him to commit to something. And he was like, nope, I don't say yes to anything on the phone right away. I think about it. And I was just imagining Noah Kagan talking to Daniel Kahneman. And Daniel Kahneman would be like, no, I'm not playing your game. You can't high pressure me. And I would rather be like a Daniel Kahneman than Noah Kagan. And I was like, it's very clear to me, like Doe is trying to pressure people into stuff. Mm. And I'm like, I've listened to the deals that they do with AppSumo. And I heard they're like super hard negotiators.
Yes.
And it's like they...
That's what I've heard.
Yep. So I'm like, I don't really give a shit anymore. So I blocked his channel. And I think he's doing awesome though, right? He has like a million subscribers or something.
Great. Yeah. You know, they released their own SaaS, TidyCal.
Okay.
And that calendar, right, it's a competitor to Calendly. But okay. But it's so interesting you mentioned. I didn't know about what you mentioned just now, but it fits that a guy with that sort of attitude or approach wants a calendar program that makes it easy, send a link, get on my calendar, let's do this kind of thing.
And I'm like, it's my time, fuck that. No. Yeah. I'm with you. Interesting. So I need to fully form that thought, but
that was pretty fully formed.
Thank you. Yeah, because I think if you listen to those two things back to back, it's like, oh yeah, I don't want to pressure people into. I'm not buying a fucking used car. So okay, I took us weird direction. So we'll link to AI app on site.
Yep.
So people can check it out.
Appreciate it.
Anywhere else people should find you?
J. Paul Hendricks on most of the social platforms, but I don't. You know, publish much, but you can, if you want to connect with me, you can. LinkedIn is a good place.
Okay, cool. We'll put it in the link we will put the link in the description so people can get to it if they want to. And you'll just send me all that stuff later. So Jason, always fun to catch up.
Excellent.
Thanks for joining me here. And yeah, we'll get an update from you in whenever the time's right.
Look forward to it. Thank you, Doug.
And you know what? We should do a sound check, and that's usually what I do for my other show. So you mentioned that you do want to talk about guitars. So one thing, I could tell you one guitar that I think it's my most recent one that I got. Yeah, acquisition. Yep. So I really love the idea of the pre-war acoustic. So we're talking, maybe it's not obvious. So basically like before 1940-ish or so. And I don't know, they're super cool. I really like the Gibson acoustics, and those tend to be quite expensive. If they're in great condition, they may be probably $7,000 to $10,000, something like that. And then one that's beat up, it might still be like $2,000 to $3,000. However, there was a lower end brand still made by Gibson, but it's called Kalamazoo. And I found one of those, and essentially it's like the same wood. Some of the bracing's different. Some of the appointments are a little bit different, but these were budget guitars and very cheap. So basically I found one that looked to be underpriced, and it was in great shape. I don't think there were any cracks. And, I'm not an expert, but generally I was just like, man, this is in great shape. Didn't need a neck reset and that sort of thing. But anyway, it did need a little work, and I finally dropped it off at a really good luthier in the Denver area.
Oh, look at you.
And I was a little afraid that it might need a refret. So there were a couple loose braces. That's not a big deal. The bridge was a little beat up. Tuner, screw holes were a little off. So they, that's pretty easy to fix, but it does need a refret, so that's going to be expensive, but it's going to play much, much better.
You plan on keeping that?
I think so, yeah.
Because you flipped guitars previously.
Yep, I flipped, and I think I'm going to keep it for a long time. I could see if I'm just like, I don't connect with it, but I think with the new frets, because old frets of that time frame, they're more near. Have you played some old low fret?
I can't say that I have.
So the frets are a little bit smaller. Yeah, like less wide, and they're not as tall. And after years, like they get worn down.
Yeah, that's right.
So after, so I did drop it off at the shop. It's going to take a couple months. They were pretty backed up. It's a very good luthier and stuff. And it's actually, I got a good deal on the guitar, but this work kind of erases it. And I probably could get like a cheaper fret job. But I mean, this guy like specializes in like vintage acoustic restoration. I think he worked at like Groon's or Carter's somewhere in Nashville.
Well, I have to say, I love the new intros for the Doug Show.
Oh, thanks.
You got to keep doing that. And I like that you're mixing it up. There's, it's always something new when.
Yeah.
And please keep doing that.
Okay.
Right? Because it makes me, I always listen to your episodes, but it makes me want to say, okay, what's he going to play this star?
Okay. Like, it keeps it fresh. Yeah. When a couple times, like I've sat down and I'm like, all right, I'm going to do one. And like, I'm just not feeling it. And I'm like, you know what? I'm not going to force something. So I'm like, I have been putting it off enough where I'm like, I need to fucking do it. So actually when I get home from this conference, because I want to do music for Mile High Fi, and I keep punting it off, and I need to just do it.
Well, if you get two or three good ones in you, record all of them, and then you can them whenever, right?
Yep. And that's my hope. I want to have a few, and then I could just give it to my producer, Chris. And I'm like, you could use any of these. Mm. It's totally fine. Mix it up depending on like the mood of the episode. Cause I think some will be acoustic, some will be electric, some will be just, I don't know. I don't know.
Right.
But thank you for saying that. So, or have you been playing a little bit more? Or?
I have not, because I relocated. So I've been very much in mobile mode. Okay. I did play with the band, the guys that I used to play with in Hong Kong. I played, I'll say 2 months ago. So that was my last show. So I guess I could say I played as recently as 2 months ago. We did a show in Hong Kong, but it wasn't our best. We hadn't been rehearsing enough.
So. Okay.
But it was fun.
Yeah. So. Very good. All right.